Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing today?
This afternoon.
Whatever this good. Is.
All right. Good. I'm good. I try not to take the losses personally, and that's a good. I find it to be a good policy, even though the wins maybe are a little less personal and exciting. Because that was one frustrating loss. The Oilers didn't deserve to lose this game, Bruce. They were clearly the better team this game, and yet they found a way to lose 5-3 to the Ottawa Senators.
Yep. Couldn't even come up with a point.
Frack.
In a game, they dominated.
Did
by
they
every
ever?
Every statistical measure.
Except did they ever? Like the grade A shots were closer, as we measured them, the grade A shots were closer than the shots in terms of percentages. The Oilers had 15 grade A shots to 9 for the Senators, according to our count. And the Oilers had 8-5 alarm shots. The Senators just 5. Yeah. But the Senators still found a way to score and the Oilers didn't. Some of it was goaltending. But anyway, we'll get into this in our two good things, two bad things, two numbers, and one conundrum podcast. Bruce, what's your good thing?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the opening goal of the game scored by the Oilers. I thought they came out sharp and looked like they were ready to go. And I just thought this whole play was just gorgeous that developed. Very patient play. That developed from deep in the zone, at least where I'm going to pick it up, when Leon Draisaitl came up with it and dropped it back to Evan Bouchard at the point. And Bouchard moved from left to right and drew two guys to him, and then he did his backhand flip pass that beat both guys and found Mattias Ekholm alone on the other point. And Ekholm took it hard up the left side into the faceoff circle, and then he just fired a hard pass into the basically the goal crease where Adam Henrique was stationed, and he was able to get a stick on it and pop it home. And I just thought everybody did exactly what they should do to make it look easy in the end. It wasn't easy. It was a high skilled play by Edmonton's second line in this game that opened the scoring.
There was another play that I liked with Henrique in the first period. It was kind of more of an outside shot, but he made a quick kind of move with the puck and was able to get off as he's coming in over on the rush, made a quick deke on his check and was able to get off a good hard shot outside. And he's showing a skill. He's not like a super flashy player, but he does have some skill. Bouchard now, Bruce, has 72 points in 69 games. 72 points in 69 games.
Still he's stuck on 15 goals where he's been for quite a while now, but he's racking up the apples.
Would have been nice. Would have been nice tonight if he had one of his many shot attempts. How many
Eight shot attempts? 4 on net.
Yeah. Which isn't a bad, terrible ratio for someone who shoots as much as he does from the point. But yeah, it would have been nice if he had been able to find the twine. And you're right, he hasn't been pounding it in. And Bruce, I'm going to go with the next two goals as my good thing because they're both power play goals. And I thought the Oilers had salted the game away early in the second period. They're up 3-1. They're rolling. And they're just two such classic plays from this era of the Oilers in terms of goal scoring. The first one is Leon Draisaitl's executioner shot. And on this play, McDavid takes the puck down the left-hand side on the power play, puts it through someone's legs back to Bouchard at the point. Bouchard tees it up for Draisaitl, who lashes it, absolutely lashes it into the net. It was a classic version of the executioner shot. I mean, it was one of the best ones I've seen. You just don't know how it goes in almost. Like, did it go, which shoulder did it go? I couldn't even tell if it went over which shoulder, like was it near post or far post that he found it in there. And what a shot.
Yeah, I think it had to be. I mean, from the angle he was shooting, it was just inside of both posts, really. So I think it had to have beaten. I think it went over the shoulder of Corpus Salo by his left ear as opposed to his right ear.
Yeah, that's what I think so too. And then it ended up
right under the crossbar. Yeah. Well, he was shooting from such an angle that he couldn't hit the near side net if he wanted to, right? He could only see a sort of little square, a little rectangle on the far side, and he hit the top of it.
And I said in our comments, Bruce, and I mean this, and I think we can all, so long as we live or we have memories, this is the kind of play from this era, from this team that we'll remember. And, hopefully it'll even be more covered in glory, that it will be in some big Stanley Cup games that we're going to see this kind of goal scored in key moments in Stanley Cup games. So, but it is, it is a tremendous, but never in the ultimate games. I just want to see these kind of goals in the biggest games when you win the frickin' Stanley Cup. All right. And the next goal, Zach Hyman's 50th. And it was classic Hyman at the side of the net on the power play. McDavid finds him. It's off a faceoff win by Dreisaitl. Bouchard puts it over to McDavid, who immediately threads a perfect pass to Hyman, who's just Johnny on the spot and jams it in. And it was the old Johnny Busick. That's how Johnny Busick used to score his goals for the Boston Bruins. And it's funny because there was a graphic on Hockey Night in Canada. I think we'd been speculating on this earlier. Who's the oldest player to score 35 goals? And here it was Johnny Busick. He was 35 years of age when he had his first 50-goal season.
Mm-hmm. And first and only, but yes.
Yeah. Busick was from Edmonton, as I recall.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Fantastic goal scorer. But so is Zach Hyman this year. 50 goals and 19 assists. That's he and McDavid have the lopsided
for sure. Numbers. McDavid to Hyman sure seems to happen a lot more often than Hyman to McDavid. Hey.
There was a question if the Oilers let up a bit after that, Bruce.
I think they did.
I think they all did too. I think we were all like, oh, this is so great. We're all happy floating on a cloud. And I think there was a bit of a let up, and that led to a goal against and a weird goal against on the rush.
Ottawa had three clean odd man rushes while Edmonton was leading in the second period. One of them led to Stutzla's goal that made it 3-2 just a minute 14 after Hyman's goal to take some of the sparkle off of that. And then there was two other ones where thankfully they tried to hit the short side and missed the net with both chances.
Oh, that was Vinny Deharnay's bad turnover.
One was a wicked bad turnover by Deharnay, and one was just inattention to detail, I'll have to call it. And so it was, that was the problem in the second period. Just on Johnny Busick for a minute, he was indeed from Edmonton, Alberta, born 1935. He was part of the great, great Edmonton Flyers squad that won the Western Hockey League double in 1954-55 when he was just turning 20 years old. And on that team with him were fellow Hall of Famers Glenn Hall in goal and Johnny Busick and Norm Ullman, all three of whom went to the NHL and became sort of immediate stars, almost the next year. In Busick's case, it took a couple of years. And he had a career high of 31 goals at age 35. And then in 70-71, he hit for 51 goals and 116 points. That was the year that the Bruins were unstoppable. Their power play was unstoppable. And Busick did, as you say, like Hyman, he would hang around the edge of the crease. He wasn't so much a screener as he would just show up at the side of the net and deflect home a great Bobby Orr pass or an Esposito rebound variations on that theme. And after that, from ages 35 to 40, he had seasons of 32, 40, 31, 29, and 36 goals. So he did most of his scoring after age 35. I mean, he had 556 goals in his career, but I think he had 300 before turning 35, and all the rest of them came afterwards.
Maybe Zach Hyman can have a similar kind of career. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. He's a very smart and skilled hockey player. And I think smart being the operative word with both of those guys. Yeah. They figured out how to score goals, and they went and they did it.
Yeah, well, Hudzik was part of the Uke line with Bronco Horvath and Vic Stasiak, and that whole line played for those 55 Edmonton Flyers, and then they later played together in the Bruins, which is a completely different organization. The Flyers were a Detroit Red Wings affiliate, and that team also included Al Arbour, who also went into the Hall of Fame, but as a coach. He was a player on that team. And they had future executives, super scouts. Lauren Davis was on that team. And Jerry Melnick was on that team. Keith Allen, Bud Poile. There was a whole lot of guys that made their name in hockey, and either as a builder or through the coaching ranks, or as Hall of Fame players, as the great Johnny Vucic did.
I remember Norm Ullman as an Edmonton Oiler in the WHA, and he was a very good Edmonton Oiler for a short amount of time. He kind of had his last really good years in hockey, but he was still flying when he got here. Mm-hmm. Bruce, let's move on to our bad things. Go ahead.
Yeah. This was a game where I'll say that the officials did not meet a marginal call that they didn't decide to make, including a couple of absolutely dreadful ones on Vincent Desharnais. One for Brady Tkachuk basically running into him from behind and flopping on the ice, and the other for basically winning a race to the puck and with both guys trying to chip the puck, taking his guy out, and that was interference, and that led to the tying goal. All that aside, this was a game where you couldn't afford to take a penalty. In the third period, Oilers allowed nothing. I think Ottawa had one shot in the third period, and Edmonton was dominating the territorial play and trying to score the winning goal. And with just over three minutes to play, they had more pressure on in the Ottawa territory. And then there was one tiny mistake. A puck popped out into the zone, sort of middle of the zone. And both McDavid and Nugent Hopkins went toward the puck, and they were the 2 and 3 forwards, because Hyman was, I think, on the boards or at the net front. And it got chipped by them, and all of a sudden it's 2-on-2. Bouchard's on the point, and the Ottawa guy there chips the puck past Bouchard and up the right side, defensive right side of the ice. Now the only guy left is Matthias Ekholm, 1-on-1. Against a apparently faster Ottawa player, and Ek came over and did his damnedest to slow the guy down. And somewhere in there, the refs who had put their whistles away, it seemed like about 10 minutes before that, decided with 3 minutes left in the game, they were going to call an Edmonton penalty for the only Ottawa half chance of the period. And was it a penalty? I don't know. I saw the replay 2 or 3 times. I couldn't tell if Ek grabbed the guy's stick. 3 minutes left in a game that has been officiated like that. I mean, let's face it. Edmonton had the puck for about 75% of this game. Somehow Ottawa got more power plays than Edmonton. I can't explain and Chris Knobloch was beside himself on the bench, the most I've seen. After the second Desharnais penalty in particular.
Well, it was a terrible call on Desharnais. What universe is that? Like, what is it? 2 minutes for being 6'7"?
They're saying the guy chipped the puck by him and he impeded his progress on the chase into
bullshit.
The puck. And it's bullshit, is exactly the word for it. And those guys, Jean Hébert and Kendrick Nicholson, should be called out for doing a crummy job of this game. Oh, I'm sure the Ottawa fans like them fine. Anyway, as is maybe, this nothing play, because the Oilers, and I'm going to harken back to an old point, in a tie game in the regular season, when you got a 50-50 play, you got to go defense. And neither McDavid nor Nugent Hopkins did, and really Bouchard didn't either. He tried to keep it in at the blue line and lost the battle. And then it's a one-on-one against, you know, an older defenseman. And that's a tall order, and he got caught doing something. And that led to your bad thing, which I will...
The bad thing was the PK because they scored three. So they had four power plays, Ottawa. They killed, Edmonton killed off one. But on the three others, they scored off two faceoffs. And and the other one was Edmonton won the faceoff, cleared the puck. And then the Ottawa rushed up and scored. And it was like, what, 37 seconds, Bruce, that they scored the three power play goals in total on those three power plays? That's all they took?
They had 2:38 in the game, and two of it was on the one failed power
play. So 38 seconds.
So the other ones were, the first one was 7 seconds. The second one, who got the penalty there, 24, and then the last one was 9 seconds.
So when you look at these goals against, Bruce, they're not, there's nothing egregious on any of these goals against that I, like nothing like that's just like head slapping, terrible play. But there was it's just on every single one of them, what could go wrong did go wrong. But also, there were mistakes on each of them. And I don't know. It was just like, so the first one, Carrick loses the faceoff. He's, of course, acquired so he can win faceoffs on the PK. But he lost that one cleanly. And Vinny on this one, I think this is the one where he starfishes.
He laid down and
And he tried to, and he did it too early. If he had backed up into the, instead of laying down, if he had backed up into the slot, he probably would have stopped that play. Nurse was a little high up too and didn't get down quickly enough to help out Vinny down low. But Vinny, I think, did go down a little fast on that one and otherwise might have made the play. It's a very, but he didn't know where the shooter was. For all he knew, the shooter was.
He was blocking the lane.
Yeah, right.
And the guy lobbed it over him.
It's a tough play. But so there's no, like the most obvious loss is the face-off loss on that one. And the next one's the rush up the ice. And Kulak and Henrique managed to allow a pass into the middle of the ice. And Carrick just quickly misreads it, thinks it's going to go to one guy, and it goes to the other guy. And he leaves the shooter open. And Nurse might have attacked the shooter, but he, you know, there was other people that could have been passed to. So again, you know, and this one is a shot that you'd hope that, you know, if your goalie is sharp that day, this is the save he makes on this shot, on this power play chance. Because it wasn't a five alarm shot. It was a really hard grade A shot. But if that's the save that Calvin Pickard's got to make in this game, or one of the saves that he might well have made. And I'm not blaming him for the loss, but he certainly got outplayed by the opposing goalie, and that's never good news. I'd say the goal just before that too, the even strength rush chance was another one that you'd hope that maybe that's the Stützle goal where maybe he could get that one too. Like those two ones are grade A shots, but they're not like they're 25%ers at best, maybe, you know, probably closer to 20% in there. Mm-hmm. And you'd hope that the goalie could get both those shots.
Short side, both of them.
Yeah.
And my view, all four of the goals were short side, although he didn't really on the two Chychrun goals, which were disgustingly similar to one another.
Yeah.
Neither time did he really have time to come over and get set, and Chychrun could just kind of beat him to the short side before he got over there, right? But all of the goals went in the short side, two glove side and two stick side. And Ottawa tried a few more shots there, and I didn't blame him for trying.
The third one, I didn't really like Pickard's play on it, the winning goal. He was down on his knee, you know, doing that thing where they're hugging the post. The guy was kind of behind the net though, and there was no chance for him then to push over fast enough and get that shot. In his position, he's just not going to ever. He's not agile, and I mean, he's not an acrobatic goalie. He's not the goalie that you want in net if you're looking for that kind of save. I don't think. You know, where you're charging across the net and making a dramatic save. That's not Pickard's game. And Ottawa had a number of chances like that, and he didn't stop one of them, I don't think, essentially. On the final goal, the faceoff was kind of a soft. It went to the side, Deharnay. It went to Deharnay and the Ottawa winger. I think it's Kachuk or another Ottawa player. It was kind of, Deharnay was kind of doubled up on it. And Kachuk gets the puck. And the first mistake, I think, is Vinny. overcommitted on Tkachuk in the corner. He decided he was going to rub him out, take him out on the play. And when mm-hmm. he did that, he took himself out of the play. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be critical, because if he had been more conservative and hugged to the middle of the ice, Batherson, who made the pass, I believe, might have been harassed by Vinny in his big reach, and it might have changed everything. So he was too aggressive. He went for the hit, and that starts off the chain reaction. Nuge is there then on Batherson, and he kind of gets fooled a second. And so instead of attacking the player with the puck, he bent down to, you know, block the passing lane with a stick, and he's down there for like one beat, two beats as Batherson's sizing up his pass. Meanwhile, you know,
Chychrun's doing the exact same thing he did Chychrun's on the other lost
moving into the slot
and just drives into when nobody's close to him,
and he has a chance. Batherson has all the time in the world to make this pass because Nuge isn't on him, and Nurse isn't on him either. Neither Nurse or Nuge get on the guy, and it was really more Nuge's fault than Nurse's fault. I mean, in theory, Nurse could have tried to read it and move over to cover Chychrun because Batherson's kind of covered by Nuge. But there is kind of a lane to the net for Batherson because Daharnay's in the corner. And that's why I think Darnell's frozen in his spot. So it's this weird, quick, it's even too much to call them mistakes almost, but they end up being mistakes. I think Nuge's play was the biggest. If Nuge had gone right to that guy and checked him, there might not be a goal there. That was the best moment to shut down that play, the most obvious moment, other than Pickard coming up with a big save. And again, because he's in that, whatever they call it, stance, hugging the post, he wasn't able to make it. So with that kind of penalty killing, I don't know, is it just bad luck? Or is this indicative of a bad penalty kill? Bit of both tonight.
Well, they got three clean shots from guys in the slot.
Yeah.
And nobody was close to the shooter on any of the three.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
cross-seam passes.
Yeah. Yeah. Or whatever.
Well, you know, rushing in. Nobody, yeah.
Nobody covering the guy. Nobody covering the passing lane. I mean, that's a bad combination. And if your goalie's not making the saves, well, that's pretty much the trifecta, isn't it?
It is. Bruce, what's your number?
Yeah. Yeah, numbers today. I'm going to go with this. This is, Darnell Nurse in this game. 5-on-5 with Nurse on the ice. The Oilers had 22 shot attempts to 3 for Ottawa. They had 13 shots to 0. Ottawa didn't even have one shot during the 16-plus minutes that Darnell played today. Like, the puck was in their end the entire time. And yet he wound up being one of the, you know, the failed penalty killers of the unit that cost his team the game. And yet on 5-on-5, you know, his numbers were pristine. He had 5 shots of his own, 8 shot attempts. And I thought, you know, he was skating, moving the puck, moving himself into good spots, and contributing to the cycle. And this is on the second unit, mostly with Desharnais and a little bit late in the game with CeCe, and who I understand is taking another battering for being on the team in the game that they lost. So I don't know that that seems entirely fair, but there's a few things that went wrong, and most of it was on the PK. And I guess he was probably out for the
we didn't tag him with any mistakes on the PK.
He was not. No,
it was Desharnais,
it was Desharnais, and it was
Kulak.
Yeah, Nurse was out for all 3 goals against. He played 1:11 on the penalty kill, and Ottawa scored 3 goals, and he played 16 minutes of 5-on-5, and Ottawa didn't even get a shot on net. How's that for?
There was 2 missed shots Ottawa had when Nurse and Desharnais, where like one was that Desharnais turnover, and there was another chance in their own zone think it was Nurse who was the culprit there, and two absolutely wild scoring chances that were really dangerous that they missed the net.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there was that with
Nurse. So three shot attempts, and those were two of them, and then they had they allowed one other entire shot attempt. You know, anyway, they're by the numbers. If you only look at 5-on-5, like some analysts seem to like to completely focus on the 5-on-5 game. I'm a more of a whole game guy myself, bearing in mind that the different situations come with different odds. You know, you're not going to outshoot the other team if you only play penalty kill and not power play. Nurse was a shining light at 5-on-5 and part of the epic fail on the penalty kill.
Bruce, my number is you didn't like him losing that.
Well, 1 minute and 7 seconds on the PK, 3 goals against, and we tagged him with a mistake on all three of them, right?
Not the last one. I didn't yet.
No, we haven't reviewed it.
Okay. I didn't think he lost the faceoff, Bruce. Okay. I thought it was a soft. Like, I think that's...
The official scorer said Ottawa won it.
So. Well, I think if you watch it, it's...
I will.
It's not his loss if they lost it.
All right.
So, anyway, I could be incorrect. I've sometimes
where'd he go after?
Yeah, he went to the point because he thought it was going to be the point, and mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I guess that's their system.
Wrong maybe, point.
But it might have been. Nuge was there. Nuge should have got that guy. Is the truth. All right, Bruce. My number is around the Oilers' incredible 97-second shift in the third period, starting at 12:33, the offensive zone time. And in those 97 seconds, Bruce, the 5 Oilers on the ice, the McDavid line with Nugent, Hyman, and paired up with Ekholm and Bouchard, in those 97 seconds, they completed 22 passes. They won 9 battles. And really, that was the most, when you watch that shift again,
the
dramatic thing is how hard they're working and winning battle after battle. 9 battles, clear battles they won. They had 3 missed shots, one of them really in tight by Nuge that was a tough one. And, of course, there was one missed penalty call. McDavid at one point went in the corner, and he was grabbed by the other guy and slowed down and almost fell over because he's Connor McDavid and strong and agile and balanced. He didn't fall down. So that was
because the refs didn't want to affect the outcome of the game, David, they didn't call that one.
That was a very frustrating shift, not only because of the missed penalty call, but because they had in all of that, and with all of that work and fantastic skill and passing, they couldn't get one clear shot. And it was just luck. It's just often it comes down to puck luck where that just doesn't bounce right for you in the right second. And it just didn't bounce for them because they did everything on that fantastic shift, but score a goal. Such is hockey. Bruce, our conundrum today. What do they got to do? What do they got to do here? What do they got to do to get a win? You know, what would you say? What's the key thing that they got to do here to get a win?
Well, next they go into Winnipeg, and it's going to be like two teams with like a bear with a sore paw because Winnipeg got sacked on the weekend. They lost 6-3 and 3-0. In a pair of road games. They lost by the exact same score Edmonton did last night, and the quotes coming out of the Winnipeg locker room are very similar to the ones coming out of the Edmonton one, where they lost to, was it Islanders? Got 6 goals on them? I mean, that's hard to do when you're a top defensive club in the league to give up 6 to the freaking Islanders.
The Islanders are desperate, though, Bruce. This is one of these, we've talked about this, right? About you're playing these still desperate teams trying to make the playoffs. And that wasn't the Ottawa Senators tonight. They were just out for a skate and it kind of looked that way. But anyway.
Yeah. Anyway,
what do they got to do, Bruce? What do they got to do?
Time to try another shuffle, I guess. I think this is the time for Cody Ceci to come out. I argued vehemently on his behalf this weekend that to bench him in either Toronto or Ottawa in his home province where he played for both teams as his first ever benching would have been really harsh and unfair to the man who's, whatever you think of his play, you can't say that he hasn't been an honest citizen that's given it for the whole 3 years that he's been here, that showed up for every game and, you know, he gives his best effort, whatever that is. But now you've got a situation where you've got four right defenders. One of them's racking up points every game, making mistakes. And the other three are not racking up points every game and also making mistakes. So you got to pick two of those three. And I would suggest that Deharnay sat out a couple, Stetcher sat out a couple. Maybe this is the time that you give Cody Ceci the seat from on high and call it a maintenance day if you have to, like they did for Evander Kane today, and put Stetcher back and see what he can do with Darnell on second pairing. And
you know, the truth
put
is,
Binny Bruce, back with Gulak, and
you win 8-3 against Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
You don't screw with the lineup.
Yeah.
I know they needed to get wanted to get Vinny back in there. They should have kept Stetcher in then.
Mm-hmm.
I think. As for Ceci, are you saying that that coaches and GMs should actually have respect for players?
I am saying
And they should care about their feelings and their mental health self esteem and all that stuff that people talk about, but as being sacrosanct in this day and age. And you're saying that's actually important.
I think it's important. And in another life, I used to supervise people. And one of the keys to being a good supervisor is to treat your people with respect and understand their circumstances, which to bench Cody Ceci today, after he was Edmonton's best defenseman in Toronto last night, by the way, in his hometown where he played for 10 years, four with the 67, six with the Senators. And now he's come out west, voluntarily, you know, signed with the Oilers, and he plays one game a year in his hometown. To bench him for that game would have been gross. And it would not have been popular with CC nor with his teammates, with whom he is popular. So I said, this isn't the time to do it, but the time is coming. And now I'm saying the time is maybe here, that it's time to try the six-man defense unit without CC and see if it's better or worse.
Bruce, I completely agree with your point about respecting Cody Ceci with those games in his hometown. I think you're just bang on right. We hear hockey players talk about this, like usually mm-hmm. when they're retired. Yep. If they see a player get benched, they'll bring up how mean that is and how mm-hmm. I just think you're right. And I don't think I just would have taken my time getting Vinny back in the lineup till they lose. You win 8-3.
Yeah.
No, you don't pull Troy Stetcher has a great game, like a good game. And Darnell Nurse has a near great game. You know, I just would have kept with that one more game until they lost. And then you go back to Vinny. It's a long season. And Stetcher, we needed to see him in a stretchy game. So I would definitely go back to him. And I agree. So one of the things you do is that you break up. You take, I like how you put it, a maintenance day like Evander Kane got. And to like sit in the stands for mouthing off at Leon Draisaitl on the bench or something like that. I don't know if it was about that. That's a bad joke. Bruce.
I don't even think that they were having a frank exchange of views, but geez, you know, we're very good in this town at making mountains out of molehills.
I didn't even see it.
And I think that was another example of it. Yeah, they were just having a back and forth on the bench. When I saw it the first time, I thought Kane was asking Draisaitl who it was that ran him over after Brian McCabe had crushed
probably
him.
Probably what it was. CeCe was their best defenseman against Toronto, by the way. Like, he was the only defenseman I gave a passing grade to. I only gave him a 5, but he was the only one who got a passing mark, and he deserved it. He had a good game. He had, like in that game for the Oilers, he was mm-hmm. he was the best defenseman, which isn't saying a lot. But
that's faint praise for the other guys. But
they've got to find Bruce. So Leon. At even strength, they've got to find. It's a little frustrating how they can't find the right line mates for him. And I don't think, like I heard Jason Strudwick and Ryan Rashad talking about how they think it should be Evander Kane, but that doesn't seem to be working. I don't see how that makes sense because I just don't see them having the defensive chops to get it done together. No. So it's not Evander Kane. And I kind of liked Evander Kane with Connor McDavid. I thought that was not bad. Mm-hmm. So maybe so why haven't we seen Nugent Hopkins with Draisaitl this year? Maybe it's time to see that and Fogle or McLeod. He doesn't seem to want to pass the puck beyond to Fogle. There was one moment in the game where Fogle was wide open in shooting position and Leon didn't give it to him. And I was thinking, why not? Like, what's going on there? And so I don't know who they're going to find to play with Leon. You know, and but they have to find, they've got to figure this out. And mm-hmm. Leon's got to figure this out himself.
Yeah.
And I personally still think it's McLeod and Fogle. I think that that can work.
That's the best options at the moment.
Maybe it's Nugent Hopkins and Fogle with Kane and Hyman on the top line, or with McLeod and Hyman on the top line. So there's different options, but in terms of what do you do next, I think you know that McDavid and Draisaitl can work together. So I don't think you need to go back to that for the regular, like right. In the next little while. You know you have that. It's always in yep. Your back pocket. What you need to do right now is find some players that Leon can have consistent, positive goals for at even strength with. We had that with Fogle and McLeod. The numbers show that. I would, if you're not going to, I'm okay if you just go back to that and you say, keep working at it. Keep doing this, guys. This should work. Mm-hmm. And stick with it. I'm also okay with Nugent Hopkins being given a shot with Leon, because I think that has worked in the past, could work again. And it's the obvious next move. So that's what I would do.
How about Henrique? They tried him today.
I like Anna. I just think he's a center. You know, it's funny. I was thinking if Adam Henrique is with Leon Draisaitl, Adam Henrique should be the center and Leon Draisaitl should be on the wing. Mm-hmm. And I know that probably wouldn't be very popular with Leon Draisaitl, but I think because I don't think he's willing to play wing with McDavid, but I don't think with Henrique, but I think that might work actually. If you had Henrique at center, because Henrique's a good center, and Leon then, you know, free up to score, like just be an offensive dynamo, you know, attack Leon, and Adam will cover for you in the defensive slot. That's how you'd try to sell it. But I think that would be the line where maybe it could be Nuge, Henrique, and Draisaitl with Henrique at center. That could also work. And then you'd have a third line built around Fogle and McLeod, I guess, which is never a terrible thing. Those are two really good hockey players. So, but they, whatever it is, it's time to find it. And don't go back to McDavid and Draisaitl again. Find wingers for Leon that are going to work in the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, Henrique, he scored his 20th of the season today.
Yeah.
That's, as they said on the broadcast, his seventh 20-goal season. His career high is 30 that he scored with the Devils in 15-16 back in McDavid's rookie year. But he's also had seasons of 16, 18, and 19 goals. Like, he's been a pretty consistent goal scorer. That's 11 years with over 15 goals. And he's not a big scorer, but he gets his goals. So the Oilers have a legit 20-goal man there. He's done it seven times. And that's maybe they're still trying to figure out where exactly he fits in this big puzzle. And I thought it was an interesting experiment today, and I didn't mind it, and I didn't think he played bad.
It was okay. Maybe they go back to that. I don't know.
Not quite his 50th of the year like Zach Hyman, but 20 is 20. Just two with Edmonton and 18 with Anaheim. So we haven't got sort of the long term effect of this guy being a consistent scorer.
Did Leon get any other? Did he get any even strength other than that play?
I don't know. He was the third assist on the one even strength goal.
He just had the one contribution to a major, mm-hmm. To a grade A shot at even strength.
How about Henrique?
And I think we'll probably find the same thing with Henrique. Oh, no, he had two. Mm-hmm. Two of them. That play, and then where's the next one? Document is a little hard to read here. Fogle had a chance in the early in the third period. Oh yeah, that was that great chance by Fogle. So yeah. Nurse put the shot in from the point, and Henrique kind of tipped the puck to Perry, I think, who kind of tipped the puck to Fogel, who then had a great chance to score.
Deked Korpisalo, who just got a little tiny piece of it. And Korpisalo had an outstanding game, in my opinion. I don't know he had any chance on the goals.
And yeah.
He made a number of outstanding saves. I mean, well, what, we have grade A shots again?
15 to 9. Yeah, 3 went in. So that's pretty good for a goalie. That's very good. Well, Bruce, next game is in Winnipeg, what night?
Tuesday at 6 p.m. Mountain.
All right. Good stuff. Bruce, thanks for talking tonight.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.